Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Merge Medical Podcast. I'm joined today by Rahul Sharma. He is the CEO of Neurality Health. Neurality Health has a voice AI-driven platform for medical offices to streamline services, including intakes, appointment scheduling, answer questions, billing clarity, and more. Rahul, hey, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Dr. Cole and Dr. Brown. Great to join you guys.
Yeah. Tell us about Neurality Health.
Yeah. So Neurality Health is really kind of, emerged, or the genesis of Neurality Health is a combination of a couple of things. First and foremost, just kind of, I'm a multiple time founder, but my last company was in the health tech space, and we developed, multi-state kind of telehealth company at the last company that I was involved in. And we observed that administrative and operational overhead was quite pronounced, right? As it pertains to the front office and back office and kind of a lot of work that's done in order to really give the best experience to the patients, right? Making sure that they understand from a services standpoint, what is best aligned with them, educating them, explaining the why to them. Things that, ultimately clinicians are very, very good at communicating to patients. But unfortunately, clinicians are doing clinical work. So in terms of kind of intaking patients and engaging with them in the outset, and then also kind of, helping them across other, things in terms of becoming a new patient, eligibility checking, pre-auth, and a lot of the mechanical things that go into establishing a patient. Those are very, very difficult things. And there's a lot of, systems and services out there that make it difficult for a practice to really optimize and personalize care for patients. And as a result of that, and combined with really the advancements in AI that have been happening in the last year and a half, we started Neurality Health, really started building it around a year ago. And we've been at market for a little bit over 4 months now. We're focused on the dental sector as our beachhead market. We will be likely going kind of horizontal into overlapping specialties here in the near future. But dental is definitely kind of our beachhead market. And in a nutshell, I mean, you already kind of gave a good, two sentence elevator pitch. But in a nutshell, we have a voice AI and a text-based AI that allows practices to intake patients when they call in, human-like voice AI that picks up the call, engages with them. If they're pre-existing patients, it has it in their memory who they are, and we'll be able to engage with them and really develop rapport, but also kind of a lot of the back office stuff in terms of managing a lot of the RCM work, namely, calling payers, which takes a lot of time from an administrative standpoint. And it's been really good so far. We've got a lot of traction, got a lot of interest, and
Can you, I saw a really cool demo on the website. Can you do that now and show our audience?
I should be able to. Didn't have it teed up, but happy to give it a quick go.
I didn't realize this thing talked to payers as well. That's really awesome. Now get it to talk to when you have these guys refuse services, get it to talk to the to the physicians that are some podiatrist in Canada is telling me I can't do a nerve block. Can you get it to do that too?
Right. Yeah. I think as it pertains to, calling payers and talking to their customer service reps, there's no real love lost there. Right.
Right.
So it does a pretty good job there, but let me see if I can get this thing to work, and I'll do a quick demo.
And Jeff Cole, how cool would it be if it eliminated peer-to-peer
dental that I'll be calling
reviews?
Be ultra cool. Yeah.
Hey there, I'm Cassie from Acme Dental. How can I help you?
Hi, I'm actually new to the area, and I haven't really seen a dentist in the last 2 years. And I actually chipped my tooth about a month ago. I'm not in pain, but I do want to get it checked out.
Welcome to the area. It's great that you're being proactive about your dental health. It sounds like our restorative dentistry service might be a good fit for you, especially since you've chipped your tooth. I can definitely prioritize you for an urgent appointment to get that checked out. Does that sound good to you?
Yeah, and do you guys take Delta Dental insurance by any chance?
Yes, we do accept Delta Dental insurance. We can definitely help you with that. Let's get you scheduled for an appointment. When are you available?
Yeah, so I work during the day, so probably late afternoons is best. And by the way, I have a young kid, and you know, he's got buck teeth. Is that something you guys can help with?
We can definitely schedule you for a late afternoon appointment. And for your kid's buck teeth, our orthodontic services might be a great fit. Would you like to schedule a consultation for your child as well? Also, just to confirm, would you like to book both appointments for the same day?
Thanks for asking. Actually, that would be ideal if you can book us kind of back to back. How is maybe this coming Thursday at 4 p.m.?
I can definitely book both appointments for you. Let's lock that in for this coming Thursday at 4 p.m. I'll go ahead and schedule that for you, and we'll text you a confirmation. Is there anything else I can help you with?
And then she'll go in and start asking me kind of a couple of intake questions about insurance and whatnot, and she'll book me and kind of go from there.
So that's pretty cool. I mean, it really is. You can tell it's a robot voice, but it's very human-like, and the interaction is super cool. The first thing that comes to mind when I see that demo is how site-specific, healthcare clinic-specific are those AI systems? Like, do you have to go in and there's like an initial period where you've got to evaluate that office for their specific needs, right? Tell me about that.
That's a great question, right? And you know, kind of to think through that, you know, yes, there's a lot of overlap that a lot of practices in a specific specialty will have, but there's also a lot of nuances, right? Differences in terms of services, who are the providers, what kind of payment related stuff, you know, do they accept, et cetera. And so as it pertains to a handful of those sort of customizable things, we will ingest as much data as the provider or the practice can give us. Oftentimes, there's also workflow related stuff around scheduling that might be unique to the practice as well, right? So these are kind of some of the documents that we ingest. Now, I think something that we've done that's really neat here in the outset is that we've built just to be able to really streamline kind of onboarding and the training of the AI. We've built different, not just web scraping, but computer vision tools to be able to really kind of get a meaningful amount of information that the system can just simply upload right out the gate, right? So we can upload a website. Oftentimes, you know, 70 to 80% of what a patient needs to know, or moreover, what a sophisticated, you know, front office staff member would need to know in order to communicate to the patient is often on the website, right? Mm-hmm. Things like who the providers are, what are their backgrounds, you know, what kind of services do they offer? Again, you know, kind of payment related, promotion related stuff, right? So a lot of that stuff will be on the website. So we'll be able to upload the website. You know, that takes about 5 to 6 minutes, and we'll have, you know, for what it's worth, 70 to 80% of what the AI needs to know in order to launch and start kind of communicating effectively with the patients right out the gate. Now, as it pertains to kind of some of the back office stuff in terms of RCM work or scheduling related stuff, you know, they do give us information in different formats, and we're able to upload that. So assuming they have all that information kind of ready to go, which most practices do because they have to train their own team members.
Right.
You know, we can get a practice up and running in a matter of really a couple, you know, an hour or two.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's amazing.
So go back to the beginning of that demo. You're the patient. You probably went to Google, or you had a word of mouth referral to a particular dentist office. Is that what I'm assuming? And so you called that specific office who is using this software. So that's
correct. Correct. Yeah. So we don't do anything from a marketing or marketing perspective in terms of how they find out about the practice, right? That's right. You know, they typically have their own marketing teams or marketing personnel, depending on the size of the practice itself. Where we really come in is everything inbound. So there's a conversational AI bot on the website itself where the patient can engage in human-like text conversation. They can engage with it in SMS-based text conversation. They can call in, right? Most practices and the average location will have anywhere between 25 to 30 missed calls at the end of the day, right? Even during the day, right? Typically 30 to, depending on the practice again and the resources, typically throughout the day, you know, 30 to 40, you know, percent of the calls will actually get picked up throughout the day. And then definitely after hours, they don't really have any personnel, right? And so this AI will basically, I guess, you know, the way I pitch it is in its most rudimentary format, and you guys just heard it, it's quite human-like, but in its most rudimentary format, it's an answering machine 1000X, right? That's effectively what it is. But moreover, we're really looking to proactively engage patients. And what that means is, you know, the inbound stuff that I just demoed, you know, that's just one component. How do you really develop rapport with a patient such that, you know, cancellation rates, no-show rates go materially lower? The only way to do that is to make sure that you've built the rapport, that you've answered the questions, you've educated the patients. Big aspect of rapport development is making sure that the patient feels like they're going to a provider that's an actual authority in the space, right? And the best way to do that is to educate them. So, you know, when they have questions, when there's follow-up checkups or check-ins, and even just kind of understanding who the patient is from a demographic standpoint, their background, their family, you know, things that they kind of divulge on their own oftentimes on an ongoing basis. You know, just having all of that in memory and being able to recall that and making it personalized for the patient.
What percent of calls or texts actually end up having to go to a human if you're using this service? I'm sure you've got some statistics on this reduces the human involvement by X percent or.
I mean, ultimately, you know, at scale, like right now, this is, you know, a lot of practices, the way they start with us is for overflow, right? So overflow of patient calls, but ultimately at scale, the way it performs, most practices will switch over to the voice and the text almost entirely, right? So it really depends on the practice and the kind of services and the kind of volume they have. But we're seeing that most practices are just simply switching over to the AI, picking up and answering questions and doing a lot of this work almost a few weeks after we start piloting with them, right? And that allows a lot of the administrative staff and the front desk people to go do other higher value work, right? Ultimately.
And we podcasted a competitor called Rhinogram that does very similar technology. And they said that it reduced calls, you know, obviously all the calls, total call number is the same, but it reduced the human interaction by 90%. Is your system somewhere in that kind of ballpark?
So I would say that we're a little bit earlier for me to give you sort of exact metrics. Mm-hmm. It'd be a bit disingenuous for me to start throwing out numbers at this stage. It just by virtue of how it works, it picks up 100% of the calls, so it never misses a call.
Right. How many practices are you in?
So we have quite a few customers. That's something that's still kind of under wraps, but we're growing very, very rapidly. We have quite a few DSOs that are emerging DSOs and fairly sizable DSOs. DSOs are dental service organizations that are, you know, multi-location organizations. And we have quite a few of those that we're working with as well. We're also working with, you know, 2-3 location practices as well. So it's a pretty big number here in the outset.
Awesome.
What happens if the AI can't answer a question? I'm sure there's some default. What happens in that situation?
Yeah. So if for whatever reason it does not have the knowledge, we've developed kind of guardrails through in-context learning and different sort of learning techniques on the back end. We have guardrails kind of on the system level, but also on kind of the agent level as well. And so it does a very good job in A, sticking to its role, which is very critical, right? Sticking to its role, but moreover, when questions are asked that are not within its knowledge base, it will notify them, and them being the patient, and ultimately say that, let me circle back with a care team member and get back to you with a response. So it'll then notify a care team member, and the care team member will actually communicate it back to the AI, and the AI will then go back and communicate that information to the patient, typically via SMS.
And why did you start with dental offices? What was the decision process there?
Yeah, it's a good question. Like I mentioned, I come a little bit more from kind of the traditional health tech, medical tech space. I think, you know, I think the running saying here is that health tech is 10 to 15 years behind other verticals as it pertains to technology and software. And dentistry is another 5 to 10 years behind health tech, right? And so that presents a lot of opportunity. There's obviously a lot of dependencies from the systems and data interoperability perspective as well. But what that means is that the dental space is there's a lot of pain there, right? As it pertains to kind of the churn in staff and kind of what they need in terms of the ability to effectively and efficiently operate.
But Rahul, in our market, I feel like dentistry practices have adopted text-based communication even more than a lot of medical practices. So maybe that's something that makes sense.
Because they
already have a foot in the door.
Yeah.
With that. No,
it's a great observation, Dr. Cole. I think, because of the pronounced pain in terms of staff turnover and the costs therein, I would say kind of practices have much more of an appetite for kind of newer technologies and advanced technologies to try them and bring them on board. Whereas I think kind of the traditional kind of medical sector is a little bit more risk averse to kind of adopting some of these newer technologies and things like this. Although there's some stuff going on in the medical sector as well. But I think the dental sector, I've also found that practice owners and DSO owners are much more willing to try a lot of these newer technologies.
And Rahul, are you at a scale where you can say that this system would result in a reduction of office staff, or does it simply have the office staff more available to do other things and happier office staff, you know, not having to deal with this 90% of these calls and texts, et cetera?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, especially here in the outset, right? I mean, I you know, even being kind of a developer, and kind of in the weeds of how what the AI's capability is, I think we're also very observant of where what the limitations are and are not. So I think especially here in the outset, a lot of what we're doing is augmenting the front office and not necessarily taking it over completely. The modules that we're building and focusing on in terms of inbound calling, proactive engagement, and in the back office, kind of the RCM and calling payers and whatnot, you know, that when that's all kind of developed at scale, I would say that the vast majority of the tasks that are done in the front office and the back office, you know, will be capable of being done through this AI itself. And what that ultimately means is that team members are, like you said, able to do kind of higher value work and tasks.
Mm-hmm. What are the types of things that the AI can do with the payers? I mean, there's usually a phone tree. Can they navigate their way through that to get to a human, I assume? And does it, identify itself as AI, or does it just start solving problems?
Yeah. So in the outset, it doesn't explicitly say that I am an AI X, Y, and Z. If the payer or the patient asks explicitly, are you an AI? It will tell them that I'm an AI and I'm a sophisticated AI, you know, something along the lines of I'm a sophisticated AI and I can help answer any questions and help you out where you need. And it will explicitly notify the user.
But like pre-certification, is there a use case there? Peer-to-peer reviews? I mean, how deep can this go?
Yeah, I think pre-cert and peer, and maybe you can give me a little bit more visibility what you're in terms of peer reviews, what you're referring to here. Maybe giving a little bit more visibility into that question.
I think the payers have created this peer review process just as a system of hoops that have to be jumped through. And in many cases on their side, they've not reviewed the records. There's really nothing been done to try to validate or try to answer the question, yes, this service is appropriate. And in so many cases, we simply have to make that connection. Typically, it's a phone call that comes into us at 4:30 in the afternoon, and they hope we don't pick it up, because then they'll send a letter saying we tried, and therefore this service is denied. And a lot of times it's simply making that phone connection and reading two or three sentences out of the note, and then typically the physician on the other end will go, oh, okay, that sounds appropriate. But I mean, it's a hoop to jump through.
Right.
And if AI could play a role in that, number one, not missing that phone call, and number two, point them to the right spot in the medical record where the service is, in most cases, clearly there's clear explanation for why that service has been requested, you know, whether it's an MRI scan or surgery or whatever it is.
Yeah. So in terms of receiving the call inbound, obviously it has a capability of doing that. And as long as kind of it's annotated properly in the chart, there's really no reason it wouldn't be able to do that. We're really initially focused on kind of outbound eligibility checking. So here in the outset, where oftentimes, you know, you have to make a couple of calls to get some, like you said, some accurate information, get some accurate information. So the nice thing about AI is it scales really infinitely, right? So even with one, pre-author eligibility check, we're able to make multiple calls to validate and get to some very strong levels of accuracy around the information that's being relayed, right? So
Raul, I want to know a little bit about your background. Sounds like you're from the IT space. So tell us a little bit about you and previous projects that you've completed.
Yeah, so I, like you said, I've been from a domain standpoint, have worked as a software engineer at some pretty big consumer tech companies, you know, over a decade ago at Yelp and LinkedIn. And I actually started my first company that was in the staffing software space close to a decade ago. We're really addressing kind of last minute churn in the hourly space, focused on industrials. We did eventually start selling into healthcare and even a little bit into dental. That company got acquired back in 2019. And then I started my second company that was in the health tech space, really addressing chronic disease and chronic illness for older adults. With a focus on addressing really loneliness and community for older adults, because that's what we ultimately determined was kind of the root cause problem for a lot of patients not availing therapeutic programs and adhering to therapeutic programs. So we, you know, the chief medical officer and the clinical team developed this novel care delivery program I and the engineering team built out this kind of narrowly focused EHR technology. And we spun up a close to 10 state telehealth clinic. And this was kind of during the COVID days, right?
Yeah.
Direct to consumer and, building an EHR and a multi-state telehealth clinic, both things I don't recommend doing for the faint of heart, but we did it and got some pretty good scale. That company is now a SaaS services company, really selling into community hospitals and as a SaaS services platform at this stage. So like I mentioned, about close to a year ago, started working on Neurality Health and kind of started architecting and building that. And we've been at market in the dental space predominantly for the last four months. And I think, really kind of my background as it pertains to healthcare and what we did in my previous company, Reviving Mind, a lot of what we were doing was in the therapy space, right? Teletherapy space. And so a lot of the learnings around what type of individual, right? And the persona and the characteristics of an individual you want to be engaging with patients, educating patients and coaching them ultimately. A lot of those characteristics and those learnings by which we have trained this AI and built this AI, the Neurality Health AI is, kind of from that, right?
What is that, rather than later stage M&A activity, what is your appetite for kind of earlier stage collaboration or partnerships? Jeff and I see a lot of interesting companies and we see things that look like they've got tremendous potential and sometimes they may run parallel with what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
One in particular has really made a science out of faxing and hooked AI to that. And in healthcare, everything is as much technology we have in the world in healthcare, so much is done by fax. And they've had some significant success. I think they've even contracted with one of the Blue Crosses to fix their fax issues. Just throwing that out there, we could make an introduction if that makes any sense.
No, would love to. I think there's a lot of kind of strategic channel partnership opportunities, ones that come immediately to mind are, solutions like you just mentioned, but also a lot of these call analytics solutions, right? Where they kind of offer up kind of the telephony or the VoIP solution to the practice itself, and they may have some sort of analytics that they offer up to the practice around the call itself, kind of maybe some, if they're relatively sophisticated, maybe some sentiment analysis and, naturally some information around pickup rates and drop off rates and things like this. But I think kind of what leaves a lot to be desired is that ultimately a lot of calls just simply don't get picked up, right? So having kind of analytics that can be leveraged to educate team members, again, there's a lot left to be desired. So for us, the ability to take on overflow, it's a really nice kind of complementary and supplementary kind of offering to businesses like that.
Yeah, and I see where Jeff Cole is going with this. We'll have to talk more about it offline, but the previous podcast he's referring to is called MedSender. And in a nutshell, they use AI to read faxes. Mm-hmm. And there's an astonishing amount of faxing that still takes place.
Absolutely.
Between medical practices, hospitals, et cetera. And Jeff and I, when we do these things, I see his gears turning right now. He's like, you just want to put these two entities in a room because you could offer both of these components as a one package. And even if you didn't merge companies, it would definitely be a strategic alliance. And there's several data companies that we've been exposed to and shown our viewers. And it really makes sense. And the spirit of entrepreneurship is warm and welcoming. And I see so many people doing what you're doing that would help one another, both help the patients and help each other financially, which is a nice segue. It sounds like you're very revenue positive. You want to talk a little bit about the numbers for the company? I know you're in a raise. That's one reason you're here. So talk to people, our viewers and our listeners, about if they decide to invest, like why they should and why it makes sense.
Yeah. Thanks for the question. So we have quite a bit of traction. We are converting because, you know, we were piloting with a lot of these initial customers. It's been only 4 months. So we're still converting customers to paid. Customers should start converting sometime next month. But in terms of the raise itself, we had raised a small pre-seed round, and you know that round actually closed pretty quickly. Kind of the first time in my career where customers are investors and advisors. I haven't really had that happen across the last couple of companies I've built, and so it's almost entirely, you know, DSO owners and doctor, you know, dentists and
endorsement.
Huge, right? So it's a huge validation. Because we have quite a bit of interest, we are opening up a quick follow-on to that pre-seed round, very close to that sort of same valuation, but still really only targeting kind of strategic investors and partner types for that round as well. We are intending on doing a more traditional institutional seed round late this fall, which will be bigger. Got some pretty good traction in order to go into that round as well. So
what's the valuation on the round you're currently in?
So the round we're currently in, we've opened up a new note for $500K at a $5 million valuation. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty conservative, but, you know, aggressively priced for strategic partners in other practices and stuff. If we wanted to, we could probably, you know, go try to just raise the seed round right now. But I think we're seeing a lot of value in getting these customer investor advisors. It's become, call it a part of our go-to market secret sauce of sorts. So
what's the note look like?
It is a safe note, SAFE. It's a note that, is used by Y Combinator. I'm a former Y Combinator founder alumni. So we use that, investment instrument.
Discount to the ultimate institutional seed round, or what are the
and cap and all that?
Yeah, so we do not have a discount or a cap on that. It's just the valuation is at $5 million, it's a $500K note. So,
and is that that's paying interest?
It is not paying interest either. Yeah, it's just a post-money note. And again, I think given the kind of traction, or moreover, I should say, you know, depending on the right investor partner interested in coming in and what kind of strategic value they can bring, we'd be open to it. We'd be open to kind of adding a discount to that. We haven't had to do it thus far. Mm-hmm.
How are you doing though? So I see with the strategic investors and the DSOs are doing a lot of marketing for you. You're going to have this $500,000. I wanted to ask you what you're going to do with it, and then more about how you're marketing outside of what you've already got with your strategic investors, et cetera. How are you going to commercialize this?
Yeah, great question. I mean, here in the outset, we're getting a lot of traction just through kind of the network itself, right? So we are getting the network effect here in the outset. We are doing outside sales as well, myself, and we have another new VP of sales that is coming on board and that's starting to work with us. Some of the primary kind of outside sales related activities that we're doing are going to conferences, but also just kind of leveraging our networks and a lot of KOLs, right? There's quite a few KOLs, key opinion leaders, also in dentistry, right? So there's a lot of kind of KOL kind of channel partners or distribution partners that we're tapping into. So those are kind of the three primary distribution sort of channels or strategies that we have in place.
Every single startup that's out these days uses the word AI, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And it's fatigued by it, to be honest. Yeah, if somebody's using it to the best it can be used, then yeah, that's great.
That's so right. And that's so right. And I think that's a poignant statement there, because, you know, so many companies, right, say AI, they just throw it in and there's literally zero AI. Quite the opposite. To your point, Dr. Cole, I think there's a lot of kind of AI fatigue, for what it's worth. And then it's kind of been nice for us, because you guys have heard it. This really is AI, right? This and you haven't seen the text stuff yet and how it's able to actually help patients navigate into becoming new members and proactively engaging them. But that's real conversational AI, the ability to actually call a payer, right? So we're leveraging real AI here.
I think calling the payers just next level, man. Fantastic. Yeah, and, you know, when we were talking about the peer-to-peer review stuff, and Jeff, you're asking him about it. If you had that knocked out, that would be a whole nother icing on the cake, if you ask me, right? As you move horizontally across these specialties, I can see that being a huge plus for a practice to get this thing.
And I think kind of having guys like you both kind of engaged and folks like you both kind of engaged with us early on, a lot of that knowledge and intelligence as we're taking the product to market or refining it, right?
Right.
Specifically to this use case that you just called out. That's why we're doing this kind of initial customer investor advisor sort of committee of sorts or group of sorts, right? Is that we have that kind of curated clinical knowledge center already in place.
Once you move over to medicine, what are the particular subspecialties you have your eye on?
Yeah, great question. I think kind of, again, specialty is that from a characteristic standpoint overlap with dentistry, where there is a good amount of, call it elective services that are taking place out of pocket, but there's still this element of insurance and payers still involved, right? So those are kind of the primary characteristics that we're looking at. You know, dermatology, optometry are a couple of the specialties.
I would think ENT makes a lot of sense.
Absolutely. ENT, I mean, you go even kind of further, kind of even ortho, right? Ortho, ENT, you know, there's opportunities in those as well. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm ortho, so that sounds good. Okay. I listened to that demo, I thought, man, that would be cool. So
yeah, would love to chat with you offline about this and what that can kind of look like, right? I know ortho has a lot of direct to consumer acquisition spend and retention spend from a marketing perspective that they do. So this can definitely streamline that quite a bit.
How about your IP? Is there anything that you've patented or anything that's unique in your process?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think from a moat perspective, we're really, it's kind of multifaceted, right? Yes, from a technology perspective, pure technology IP, I would say there's a lot of techniques that we're doing on the back end that we've built in terms of, like I told you, from a training perspective, how we're able to rapidly kind of train the AI and get a customer up and running very quickly. But it's also kind of our product strategy and the speed at which we iterate the product too, right? So the faster we're able to bring a lot of the features and the modules that I kind of mentioned at the top of the call, that's just going to allow us to be much more competitive in the market ultimately. So.
Is there someone in the market that you feel you're chasing down, or do you feel like if you continue to execute, you are the leader?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's an interesting question because, you know, people often say you got to be first to market, first to market. I think there is some value to that. But I oftentimes, if you really look at a sector and look at businesses that have done really, really well, they're oftentimes three, four, five, fifth to market, and they end up whatever the first folks made, wherever they made mistakes, yeah. We learn from those, and then we make sure we don't make those mistakes, and we just run much faster. So there's a couple of businesses I would say that have kind of call it incumbents. They don't do voice. They have some semblance of AI. It's not from what we've seen. It's not conversational in nature, and that's the reason. A lot of those customers are coming to us, right? Is because they just simply don't offer kind of the breadth of tooling and modules that we do. So
a lot of the companies that we've podcasted, particularly the ones that do something technological, we've had discussions around the data that's obtained. Any thought process on data acquisition and then data mining and monetizing that with what you're doing?
No, I don't know that we're, at least not right now. And I don't think we will kind of in the long run either necessarily leverage the data from any sort of revenue perspective. At least, I mean, that's not the idea right now. I mean, you know, first of all, healthcare data is very, it's very protected as well as it should be, right? So you got to be very mindful about kind of how to leverage it and where to right, leverage or utilize it. So we have not developed a business with the notion that the data that we're acquiring we leverage from a revenue standpoint. But you know, so that's not necessarily in the strategic roadmap as of right now.
Well, Jeff, did you have any other topics we hadn't discussed, or Rahul, is there anything that you'd like our listeners or viewers to know about that we haven't covered?
No, I think, thank you guys again for the time. Like I mentioned, you know, it's a very exciting time. We're getting a lot of traction. We are interested in going kind of horizontal with the specialties. So while we may not necessarily be in ortho or derm or plastics or any of these sort of specialties here, you know, this is a great time if you're interested from an investment perspective to get in early at a what I would qualify as a pretty deeply discounted valuation if you're a practice owner or a doctor and want to possibly utilize this in your practice in the mid to long term, and or you have some strategic alliances that you could bring to the table. So
I'm part of a group that's 40 physicians, and then our CEO is a very business-minded individual, and he's real involved in a group called the Ortho Forum, which is, I think, the 70 largest private orthopedic practices in the U.S. In fact, they have a meeting this weekend. And very, I mean, they do benchmarking, but also very, very involved in looking at innovation and ways to just support our subspecialty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's great. And I think kind of, you know, we talked a little bit about how we differentiate. I think something I didn't really explicitly call out was that, and you guys know this, you know, there are so many disparate systems, right? There's a system to do your faxes, right? There's a system to analyze your calls. There's a system for RCM. There's parts of RCM that have, point solutions, right? For specifically these modules. I think with the advent of the technology itself and the advancement that's happening, we're viewing it much more as a full-fledged system, right? Solution that manages a lot of these functions, right? In the front and the back office. And I think that's critical, right? I don't think people want to have 5 to 10 different point solutions anymore, right? They want One-stop shop. Yeah. And moreover, one-stop shop that just does it kind of in the shadows, in the background, right? Like it's not necessarily even something I have to log into to see, you know, what are the analytics? Yeah, the kind of analytics you may want to know and intelligence you may want to have is around your patients, right? Kind of, you know, who they are and what's motivating them, what's driving them. But from an operational perspective, if it's working, it's working, right? And that's ultimately what we're intending on building at scale, is an AI solution or even to a certain extent, an AI operating system for healthcare that just works, right? In the shadows, it's engaging patients, intaking them, you know, doing a lot of the RCM work that's done, that's you know, very error prone and burdensome. And it's proactively engaging patients and making sure that the conversion rates in terms of show up rates and cancellations are going down materially, and the clinicians are simply doing what they're best at and they should be doing, which is their clinical work, right?
Yeah, and it sounds like it does more than just make appointments for you. And it relieves the burden that the office staff has on both the front end and the back end. It also improves patient satisfaction, decreases cancellations, which ultimately is going to improve the bottom dollar for the practices you serve. And so I say that to say we strive very, very hard to have podcast guests that checkmark the three boxes, which are improve patient care, help doctors do their jobs, and ultimately be able to at least have the potential to enrich our members financially. And you definitely do all those. So I certainly want to thank you for joining us, Rahul. And I want to remind the viewers, there is a Neurality AI.com. Your website's neuralityhealth.co, where you can learn a lot more about your company. I want to thank you for joining us. I'm Dr. Jeff Brown with my co-host, Dr. Jeff Cole, and Rahul Sharma, CEO of Neurality Health. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, guys.